Neham Shigra Shiyuta Bharatamalam Shigram Vaishnavam Sha Shirupam Sagurjatam Sahagana Raganatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sarvaitam Savadutam Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vasatam Zitam Cha Hey Krishna Karna Sindhu Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavani Puri Vrishuvana Sita Devi Pranamami Dari Priye Vanchakalpa Dhruvyascha Kripa Sanubhyevacha Patidanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Pranitananda Shedvaita Gadadhar Srivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 1, Chapter 15, The Pandavas Retire Timely, Text Number 41. Vacham Juhava Manasi Tat Prane Itarecha Tam Ridyao Apanam Sa Utsargam Tvam Tam Panchatve Hi Ajohavit Vacham Juhava Manasi Prana itare chatam vidyava panam so sargam tam panchatve yajohave vacham juhava manasi tat prana itare chatam Vrityavapanam sotsargam Tam panchatve yajohavit Vacham speeches Juhava relinquished Manasi, into the mind, tat, prane, mind into breathing, itare cha, other senses also, tam, into that, rityao, into death, apanam, breathing. Saput Sargam with all dedication. Come that Panchadve into the body made of five elements. He certainly Ajohavit amalgamated it. Translation of a report by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind. Then the mind into life. Life into breathing. His total existence into the embodiment of the five elements. and his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from material, from the material conception of life. Please repeat. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind. Then the mind into life.
Life into breathing.
His total existence into the embodiment of the five elements. And his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from the material conception of life. Purport. Maharaj Yudhisthira, like his brother Arjuna, began to concentrate and gradually became free from all material bondage. First he concentrated all the actions of the senses and amalgamated them into the mind. Or in other words, he turned his mind towards the transcendental service of the Lord. He prayed that since all material activities are performed by the mind in terms of actions and reactions of the material senses, and since he was going back to Godhead, the mind would wind up its material activities and he turned towards the transcendental service of the Lord. There is no longer a need for material activities. Actually, the activities of the mind cannot be stopped, for they are the reflection of the eternal soul. But the quality of the activities can be changed from matter in the transcendental service of the Lord, from matter to the transcendental service of the Lord. The material covering, color of the mind is changed when one washes it from contaminations of life, breathing, and thereby frees it from the contamination of repeated birth and deaths, and situates it in pure spiritual life. All is manifested by the temporary embodiment of the material body, which is the production of the mind at the time of death. And if the mind is purified by practice of transcendental loving service to the Lord, is constantly engaged in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there is no more chance of the mind's producing another material body after death. It will be free from absorption and material contamination. Pure soul will be able to return home back to God. Oh, so the verse again. Vacham juhava manasi tatrana itare chitam Ridyava panam so saragam tvam panchitve ya johavit. Then he amalgamated all the sense organs into the mind. Then the mind into life, life into breathing, his total existence into the embodiment of the five elements, and his body into death. Then as pure self, he became free from the material concept of life. Om Vishnu Vraya Krishna Pristaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Dhanamne Namaste Saraswatam Deve Gauravani Pracharne Nirvishesha Srinivadi Pastatya Deva Satarna. One sense, it seems that some kind of mystic inconceivable activities going on, merging all the sense organs into the mind. We'd like to see a photograph of that. The sense organs merging into the mind. And then the mind into life. Exactly what that means is very mysterious. Life into breathing. You suddenly see life merging into breathing. And that's after all the sense organs merge into the mind. Well, obviously what's being talked about is what Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita. So that's what our reference is. And as Prabhupada explains in the purport, Arjuna said he had problems with his mind. And probably most of us probably also have some problems with our mind once in a while. And Arjuna says it's very difficult to curb the restless mind. Is like Chanchalam Himanat Krishna Pramati Balavadridam Tasiham Nigraham Manye Vayor Iva Chudiskara. That the mind is restless, turbulent, and obstinate, and very strong, O Krishna, and to subdue it, seems to be more difficult than trying to control the whip. So it's not only obstinate, but it's very strongly obstinate. And it's not only obstinate, but it's also turbulent. Generally, if something's in the mode of ignorance, you can't move it, it's just dull. But it's not only dull in the mode of ignorance, but it's also going here and there in the mode of passion, aimlessly wandering after sense objects. Therefore, no one knows what's going to happen next. Not only we don't know what's going to happen next to our physical body, we never know where our mind's going to wander. Of course, most people don't even notice it because they don't care where their mind wanders. They think life is meant to wander along with the mind. And as long as the mind doesn't do anything too drastic, we go along for the roller coaster. But Arjuna was not like that. He was interested in some kind of higher state of consciousness. Or at least, Arjuna knew he was suffering. And one who knows he's suffering, he obviously wants a different change of consciousness. It's when we think we're enjoying that we actually want to get more deeply into the realm of the sphere of activities and mental proclivities that we have, when we think we're enjoying. And most people think they're actually more or less enjoying, at least on the weekends or something like that. They'll be willing to suffer throughout the whole week as long as they think they're going to enjoy on the weekend. And what is that enjoyment? It's the very things that agitate the mind. They think that's enjoyment. That's called sense gratification. Sense gratification in the mind means you invent something which is completely unnecessary, but then you spend your life trying to fulfill it. And when you fulfill it, then you feel good. Of course, if it wasn't there in the first place, that desire, then you feel good. But because you put this desire there in your mind, therefore you feel bad until you fulfill the desire, and then it's not there anymore, and then you feel good. So if someone comes along and says, "My dear sir, just get rid of your desire and you'll feel good all the time if you have no desires, because you only feel good because you fulfill the desire." They say, "Oh, that's too philosophical. Life would be so dull without working like a dog, to eat like a hog, etc." And the other thing is the senses. So on the subtle platform, we're inventing things out of nothing. And then we're satisfied when we serve those and we get what we want, what we've concocted out of either someone else concocted for us or we concoct for ourselves. And then the senses, daily they want the same thing. Eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. We don't know when they're going to arise in Kali Yuga, but it's pretty straightforward. They're there. We have a choice, either serve them or not. But if we don't serve them, then they generally bother us even more until we become determined and we just don't listen to them. Or if we do serve them, then they'll always bother us. Matter of fact, the more we serve them, the more they'll bother us. It's not that if you sleep 10 hours a day, then you feel you don't have to sleep anymore. No, you sleep 10 hours a day. Every day you have to sleep 10 hours. Otherwise you feel tired. If you sleep 9 hours a day, you have to sleep 9 hours. It just, then the body will demand. You did this service to me yesterday. You have to do it to me today too. And if you can increase, double it. The more we eat, the more we have to eat. There's no limit to it until you get up to 1,000 kilo or nothing. I think one man was something like 900 kilos or something. That's when you can't get out of your bed because you can't get out of your room. And what was he doing when he had 900 kilos? He was eating something like 30 bags of potato chips a day, and I forget all the other things, you know, like 300 hamburgers or something. Because there is plenty of room to fit it all into. Plenty of space. That was an exaggeration, by the way. I don't really know. In any case, the man is eating, sleeping, bathing, defending. Kamadinam katita katita palita sturni deshas. The mind and the senses, they are never satisfied with our service. And they'll demand us to do things which we, when we're in a sane state of mind, we'd not even consider. And no matter how much they demand, no matter how much we serve them, they're never satisfied. They always think we've done less than we should have. One has to develop intelligence. So that intelligence, of course, comes in two different flavors. One is the flavor of the jnani and the yogi and maybe even the fruit of workers. Restrain the senses. Don't listen to them. Don't serve them. And the other flavor is utilize them in Krishna service. So probably right away, he emphasizes the idea that the mind is the reservoir of all desires. Now most people just don't sit there and desire. They desire something. There's no such thing as just desiring. We're desiring something, and what we're desiring is sense objects. And that's the first thing, is the sense object. Just like we're sitting here, and shortly, if the class doesn't go too long, or prasadam is there, prasadam will be there. So now we can all think of prasadam. But just thinking of the sense object, then we become attracted to it, and it inspires us to some kind of activity. And the activity is not just to think a bit more about prasadam. It means that we have to physically get inspired to utilize our active organs to go to the prasadam room, to sit down, to use our intelligence, to, when they come around with the spoon and the prasadam, to say yes or no. So it involves that sense object is there, the taste, the tongue, and we have to do so much endeavor. And it's all going on within the mind. It's not that we desire something and the mind floats us up into the prasadam room. The mind opens the mouth and everything just happens. No, it requires some activity on the part of the soul. It's all going on in the subtle platform to bring us up to the prasadam room, and then when we're there we decide which prasadam we want. And then we open our mouths to our intelligence, and hopefully we close it, and we start the process of chewing, and then we have to swallow, or else we choke. So many things are going on. But it all starts with the mind. And here it emphasizes it's going to go on as soon as the sense object is there. Now, when the sense object arises, we may say, for instance, if it was a fast day, if it was Jamasana, unfortunately, due to circumstances beyond my control, this sense object in my mind has no value today. And therefore, it may be there, but I have nothing to do with it. Therefore, the sense object is there, but we've decided not to utilize our active organs and our sensory organs in order to fulfill that idea within our mind right now. Or we can go up there to prasadam and we can say yes and we can eat prasadam and think of everything else except for Krishna and be secure, at least I'm not going to get a reaction. I'm enjoying without reaction. Thanks, Krishna. It's a good deal. You're my friend. Or we can do it as an act of devotion. Because when we consider I'm a great devotee already, there's no question my doing anything is an act of, everything I do is an act of devotion. Even though I'm doing things that people are criticizing, it's still because I'm a devotee, it's an act of devotion. There's devotion in my heart. So that's called illusion. It's just another phase of illusion. We think we're on a certain platform, and we don't even know what the platform is that we think we're on. It's just an idea within our mind, and we've identified ourselves in a certain way, which is just far beyond our actual level of experience and understanding. And when we're on that platform, we have nothing at all to learn, because I've already learned everything. There's nothing to learn from anyone, because I'm already devoted, and I'm happy. Or as it says in Spanish, as I said before, briga llena, corazón contento. Partha knows that. When the stomach's full, the heart's satisfied. And after all, that's why we're performing devotion. Not to satisfy Krishna, but to satisfy our own heart, our own desires. So that's called sense gratification. But we're happy because Krishna is so kind. He's helping with our sense gratification. Therefore, we honor him and worship him. The other alternative is to do is an act of devotion. Here is prasadam. Here is the service. Here is the, myself, Krishna's body. I'm taking this prasadam in order to honor the prasadam, to experience Krishna, to be conscious of Krishna, and that energy that's coming from Krishna, I'm going to desire that this body that's being enlivened and energized by the Krishna's mercy be utilized ever more with determination and enthusiasm and patience in Krishna's service. So that's something which explains here. We don't have to go up into the prasadam room and merge. I read in the Bhagavatam today that Maharaj Yudhisthira, he merged. So now we're going to become one with prasadam and merge into it. It would be rather messy. Prabhu, what are you doing? You're wallowing in the prasadam. I'm just trying to serve the Bhagavatam's instruction. No, it's the merging of our consciousness into the activity that's important. And here, merging our consciousness into the activity of devotion. And in order to do that, we need certain factors. We have to know, above everything, we need the devotional consciousness, how to see things. First of all, if we don't see things devotionally, then we won't be able to merge our consciousness into the acts of devotion. If we're thinking in one way, it's impossible to be devoted to Krishna. We're really devoted. There's no question of devotion. The living entity lives for devotion at every moment. Now the living entity, to different degrees, is devoted to the three modes. When the living entity is devoted and merging his consciousness, because first of all, it starts with our vision. When our vision is in the mode of goodness, then we want to live life in such a way as this harmony. We don't cause conflicts. We even try to make people happy, because when they're happy, they make me happy, etc. The mode of goodness is more or less ultimately selfish, but it's selfish in a way that's beneficial for everyone, including oneself, from the material point of view. Until one actually goes beyond the mode of goodness and tries to do something spiritual. Same idea. Mode of goodness means even though the senses are bothering me, demanding something from me, even though my desires are present from the past, my mental concoctions of what I think is good and bad, what I want, what I don't want, but because I have higher knowledge coming from Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, therefore I don't take those things so seriously. But I may examine them to see their merits, but I see it from the point of view of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. It's not that I feel hungry, and I say, oh, hunger, that's Maya. And because it's Maya, I just deny it. No, the body's hungry. It's just like you're riding a car down the street and the fuel tank says empty, and you go, I'm not the body. Filling the fuel tank is sense gratification. It's always demanding these things from me, more and more gas. So I'm just going to run the car until it goes dry, and then get out and kick it in a bad car. No, it's Krishna's car. I'm riding it for a destination, hopefully, to perform devotional service. Therefore, we're out of fuel here. Therefore, I'm going to fill the tank up so that I can utilize the car for Krishna's service. Not that the indicator says we're out of fuel, so what I do is I take a stick and I hit the fuel indicator until it stops reminding me that we're out of fuel and let it go away. And then everything is all right. No, I take it as an indicator. I fill the tank up and then I go on doing my business, which is to serve Krishna. The body is made in such a way as it gives us certain indications. And we don't just deny the indications, but we try to reasonably understand what they mean with intelligence. If I filled up my fuel tank, I ate the big feast, Pakuri just came out of my ear. In the Ramayana, it describes them. When Kumbhakarna was eating the soldiers, he was eating so many of them that they were coming out of his ears. So, Kumbhakarna-like devotion to prasad. It's coming out my ears, and then I feel a little full until the sweets come around again. And my bitterest enemy got one more than I did. And suddenly I feel hungry again, just to keep up with it. So that kind of thing, when we use our intelligence, we can say, wait a second. That hunger probably isn't a valid hunger. It's probably arising out of envy, rather than out of a physical need. So we have to examine things with our intelligence, and then act accordingly. If we look at the body as our enemy, something to be denied, we'll get into a lot of trouble. When we're 20, many devotees, when they're 20 years old, they look at the body as something to be denied. We're not going to sleep when the body wants to sleep. We're not going to eat when it needs food. We're not going to do anything it demands because I'm not the body. I'm not going to listen to it. It's my enemy. It's my prison. I'm going to break out of the prison by just denying it. And then the poor body says, oh, we're trying to help you. we're actually your friend. We're not really reminding you of these things, just out of trying to keep you here. But now, unfortunately, because we've run out of fuel and you're whipping us anyhow, we're going to get sick. Just to remind you that it's not a good idea. So now we're going to give you another reminder. It's called illness. But I'm even ill, I don't care. You're my enemy, you're getting sick all the time. I'm just going to drive and whip you. And then we get 40 years old, we're sick all the time. And suddenly we get the idea, wait a second. I'm sick all the time, I'm not really thinking about Krishna. I'm just thinking about my sick body. I'm going to go on a marathon for the next 20 years to fix my sick body. So then we got on a marathon. We have no time to think about Krishna. We're just thinking about fixing our sick body, which we make sick by so-called great tapasya and devotional service. Therefore, the body is not our enemy, nor is the mind our enemy, but we have to see that it becomes our friend by proper intelligence. So at the beginning of devotional service, we have to use our intelligence to utilize the body properly, to utilize the mind properly, to utilize our words properly, in devotion, according to the devotional instructions and the intelligent instructions coming down from the great sages and great devotees. Then we can eat prasadam, chew the food, and concentrate on and remember it's Krishna's prasad and do things as devotion. Actually experience not only the physical experience, but also the spiritual experience of taking prasadam. And that way our consciousness is merged in the activity and devotion. And that goes the same for anything. Listening to class, giving class, but then the background has to be transcendental knowledge. That everything here is Krishna's energy, everything has its utility in Krishna's service, everyone here is actually Krishna's servant, including myself. We should all be working cooperatively to serve Krishna. So with that vision, then our mind, our consciousness expands into devotional service, and everywhere, sukham, purna sukham, purnam vishvam sukhayate, everywhere becomes the potential of happiness in devotional consciousness. Now the opposite of that is when we don't merge our consciousness in devotion, then we merge our consciousness into the different aspects of our gross and subtle body. Either we merge them into our faulty intelligence, which we can, or, well, first we merge into our false ego. Our consciousness is ready. Merge into our false ego. Whatever I'm doing, the background is service to the false ego. Now, if not aware of that, then we're absorbed in it. In other words, what a strange conception the speaker is giving me now. Immediately attacking my false ego, which I don't have, of course. But he's, just by implying that I have a false ego, immediately he's insulting me. Now we know he has a false ego. That's pretty obvious. And we can tell it because he's attacking everyone's false ego in the audience. So we don't have a problem. He is a problem. So of course all of you don't have a false ego. I'm just talking about my false ego. Just so that you can pity the poor speaker. So the false ego means that somehow or another I'm identifying myself with the body. So that's very subtle, but it's very effective. That even such a personality as Jarasandha, he was so powerful, he had the strength of 10,000 elephants. He could fight all day long in a battlefield. He had such great endurance. He was able to capture 20,000 warriors and imprison them. Inconceivable strength, inconceivable ability to manage. He was managing a whole kingdom. After all, if you take 18 Akshohini soldiers to fight against Krishna, then you must have a pretty good organizational ability just to organize the food, the prasad, for 18 Akshohini divisions, not only for the soldiers, but for the horses and everything else. Inconceivably powerful personality, very generous. He would give anything to the Brahmins. Every day, he had a certain time, and all the Brahmins, whatever Brahmins would want, they would come, and he'd give them whatever they wanted. So generous, followed the Vedic principles exactly, although he was a demon. But demons also sometimes follow the Vedic principles. When Krishna and Balaram came, not Balaram, Krishna and Bhima and Arjuna came in order to challenge him to a fight, but they came disguised as brahmanas because Uddhava had suggested that. Krishna's minister had suggested that they go in disguise as brahmins and ask for charity from Jarasandha and ask for a fight. That way Bhima would be able to fight against Jarasandha, and by Krishna's presence there, Bhima would be able to defeat Jarasandha, release the kings, and avoid killing all the soldiers. Then Krishna, in order to inflate the false ego of Jarasandha, as soon as they came disguised as Brahmins, immediately Jarasandha noted that they had huge bodies. After all, the Kshatriyas at that time were 6 meters high. Krishna, it says, is a rather a small Kshatriya. He was only 3 meters high. Sounds like your phone became ecstatic. So if you have a phone, try and maybe they turn the phone off when you're in the class. That way you don't have to go through this. Then he noticed they also had bone marks on their shoulders. Brahmins at that time, I don't know how tall they were, but they were obviously not 3 meters tall. He noticed that they must be Kshatriyas. And he looked at them, they looked a little familiar. He couldn't quite remember their name. It was one of them started with a K, but he couldn't really. K what? Give me a hint. The other was an A, and the other one was a B, but A, B, K. Doesn't make any sense. Anyhow, he's saying, alright, they've come here, whatever, you know, let's see what they want. So Krishna said, my dear Jarasandha, you're so generous. He gave the example of Marashibi. Marashibi was some pigeon came and sought shelter of Marashibi, and then one vulture, not crow, one eagle came and demanded the pigeon because it was his food. The king said he'd give the pigeon protection, therefore he began to cut the flesh from his body so it could be equal to the pigeon's weight to give to the eagle. But the more he cut flesh from his, just imagine cutting flesh. I mean, if I did it, the pigeon wouldn't save the pigeon either. Cut the first piece of flesh and the ambulance would have to come. But these kings were so powerful that they were cutting his own flesh, putting it on the scale, but the pigeon got heavier every time he did it. So things were getting bloodier and bloodier. Didn't matter how much flesh he ate. So then finally he just put himself on the scale as a sacrifice to the eagle to save the pigeon. And then they turned into Indra and Agni. It was just a test. Similarly, Ranti Devi was fasting and different personalities came finally he got some food. He was about to die from starvation and thirst. Different persons came and asked for the food. And then finally some dogs came and he gave them the last bit of water he had before he was going to die. And it turned out that they were all demigods testing him. In this way, Krishna gave Jarasandha different types of examples. And Jarasandha said, yes, that's it. I'm going to say, if whatever they want, I'm going to give them in charity. That way I'll get immortal fame. Even if I have to give them my head. So we may think, wow, what a crazy person. He's going to cut off his head just to satisfy his false ego. But believe me, he's not the only one in the world willing to do it. And not only that, but there are many people in the world, they're sacrificing everything just for their false ego. Matter of fact, practically everyone in this world, that's what they're doing. Along the way, they may stop and take something to eat or whatever else. But ultimately, they're serving their false ego. They want immortal fame. They want to live on. Even family life, which is not, when it's not in Krishna consciousness, why do people have children? Of course, they have children previously because the children would actually help out in the farm. They were useful. They weren't little trophies. This is my little doctor here, and this is my potential lawyer, and this is you know, who knows, well, he was a mistake anyhow. Whatever. But actually they're little trophies, expensive trophies, expensive hobbies, to satisfy one's false ego. Who's your son? Oh, he's a lawyer. Well, who's your son? Oh, I'm ashamed. I can't even say it. He died as far as I'm concerned. Well, what is he? He became a Hare Krishna. Oh no, a hairless Krishna. No, a hairy Krishna. So people are working essentially for their false egos, so that they can live on. Otherwise, why don't they have a tombstone? Previously, people used to burn the bodies and they used to throw the ashes into Jamuna. There's no such thing. But they want to have that tombstone. They're thinking, my name will live on forever. Until the developers come and knock your tombstone down. And you become, you know, the fertilizer for some apartment house. Anyhow, people are hoping against hope their false ego will live on forever. Because it's obvious the gross body won't. But they think that the false ego can live. And then, of course, when we're not consciously or unconsciously working for our false ego, then we're working for our mind and our senses. But they're like usually they're in an alliance together. And the thing is how we manage our serving our false ego, and because sometimes the senses and mind, they have one desire, but we think our false ego will be more benefited in a different way, even denying what the mind and senses are demanding. So generally speaking, many people are willing to sacrifice even their health, their well-being, even the well-being of others, to serve their false ego. So the first thing we have to do is get rid of our false ego. That's why Krishna says, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshiti Nakanshiti Samat Sarveshu Bhuteshu Madhvakin Labhate Param. To get rid of this false desire to serve something, hankering, lamenting. Hankering, lamenting doesn't mean only for the gross senses and for the mind, whatever. It also means for the false ego. I have profit, adoration, distinction. To give up those things. Not only divahinsa, kutinati, lava, pratishta, whatever. Kutinati, enviousness, divahinsa, hurting other living entities. What is the other one? There's one more. There's three of them. And then there's lava, puja, lava, and pratishta. So it's also hankering and lamenting for that. Oh, they're not honoring me. People don't love me. They're not giving me some profit. Whatever. So this is all subtle. So we also have to give up hankering and lamenting for those things. Generally, we look at someone else who has more profit, adoration, distinction than we have, and that's what we want to strive for. So we take their instructions or example and hope in the future people will give me similar profit, adoration, and distinction. To give up and then to lament, oh, I tried so hard, I followed their instructions, and still I didn't get it. Still I got grief. Then, to give that up, then we can actually try to see all living entities as spiritual beings, as Krishna's servants, not as potentially my servants, nor as potentially my competitors in trying to become the Lord of the material world. We look at everyone as potentially an ally or a competitor in my attempt to become God. So that's also out of the false ego. So when we give that up on that level, then we can actually be happy. We won't be in anxiety. what circumstances we're put into, because we realize that soul is actually transcendental, beyond material nature. Despite contact with the material body, Arjuna, the soul is neither doing anything, nor are we really entangled. We're disentangled by this whole false ego, or our false conception, which supplies the false ego, allows us to maintain the false ego. If we hear the right knowledge and we accept it, then the false ego gets weakened. It's going to complain, and of course we can walk out of the class, and the false ego will say, "You don't really believe all that, do you?" I mean, that was just his philosophy, or Krishna's philosophy, whoever that may be. But come on, be practical, be real, go for it. Or we just forget, conveniently forget. We don't consciously forget, we just don't take seriously the fact that I can come back from the material concept of life and actually make spiritual progress. We just forget. In any case, this is something about what's going on here. It's not just some kind of merge, like you merge, you know, vanilla, and you merge strawberry and chocolate together, and it's all kind of like a big merge. No, it's merging of our consciousness into the devotional consciousness, our activities into devotional activities, our perception of things into spiritual perceptions, our ego into the ego of being Krishna's servant, and that way we actually eventually come out as a spiritual being, as a spirit soul, and that's the perfection of our life, because then we're able to return home. Then we will be home. Not only after we leave this body, but even in this lifetime, we'll actually be in the spiritual kingdom, in spiritual consciousness. That is the way of spiritual and godly life, after attaining which a man is never bewildered, that even at the hour of death, one can enter into the kingdom of God. But as Prabhupada says, there's no difference between devotional service and being in the kingdom of God. So even in this lifetime, we can actually be in the kingdom of God. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes?
You mentioned that Jarasandha had false ego, and due to that he was ready to sacrifice his own head. Whereas we see Kshatriyas like Arjuna, Bhim, they were also ready to do anything if their words are not true, like he was ready to enter into fire or kill the Yudhishthira Maharaja, because his bow was challenged.
That's Krishna's pastimes. Now what they were thinking, you know, whether they were in devotional consciousness or not, we can understand these are Nitya Siddha devotees. Whatever they're doing is part of Krishna's pastimes. So we can't assume that they were doing it out of false ego. But it appears like that for our instruction. But we shouldn't think that that's perfection. Perfection is doing everything for Krishna. And we can understand that these souls actually, that's really what they're doing. Because they're just part of Krishna's pastimes. But if everything was done, they were acting just as Brahmins, it wouldn't be very exciting for us. Because we're very passionate and ignorant. Therefore Krishna has to create this whole drama in order so that we can listen. Otherwise we just fall asleep. There's no pastimes to say. It was only philosophy, and it was all pure philosophy. No one would come to class. This is pretty boring. So therefore Krishna has to create this whole drama going on so that we'll actually listen to the philosophy. That's called Mahabharata. Anything else? Alright, thank you very much. Grandharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Vimanande.